Our guest today was a radicalized Muslim willing to die for the cause of jihad until he converted to Christianity in 1994. His insights into the Muslim world will help you understand our times. That's straight ahead.
And this is something America's not aware of. Most of ambassadors in the Middle East are very pro-Islamist. They love Islam. This is why they choose them, because the populace can relate to them and they can relate to the populace. So, you know, most ambassadors, U.S. ambassadors in Muslim countries are very much pro-Islam, and they lean towards the Al Gore way of thinking and they lean towards the government way of thinking, and that is Islam is a peace-loving religion. In fact, that's what the Muslim Brotherhood took advantage of.
This is Understanding the Times Radio with commentator and author Jan Markell. Every week, Jan brings you insight that helps you understand the times according to a biblical worldview. Today, our guest for the entire hour will be Walid Shubat, who is a part of PLO until his conversion to Christ. Co-host Eric Barger will be joining Jan as they talk to Walid about many issues facing our world today. Here's Jan.
Welcome to the program that looks at news, views, inconvenient truths from a decidedly biblical perspective, now in our 13th year of broadcasting. Going to be bringing on a familiar voice here in just a second as we look at some current issues. By way of update, we're going to consider the Benghazi debacle a little bit here. Then why are so many Americans caving to Islam? And having said that, how about the church? How is Islam infiltrating the church these days? So that and a whole lot more. And I began talking to Walid Shubat back in 2004. He came to one of my conferences in 05 here in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And he's quite an expert on all things Islamic. He does have a new book. We'll say more about that later. But the title is The Case for Islamophobia, Jihad by the Sword, America's Final Warning. And I'll be referring to that throughout the interview and to some other things as well. And I have in studio with me, my co-host for this broadcast anyway, is Eric Barger. Eric, thank you for coming in today.
My pleasure, Jan. Thanks for having me.
And Walid Shubat, welcome back to Understanding the Times Radio.
You bet. Thank you for having me, Jan.
Walid, I'm going to ask you an introductory question here, and please bear with me as it's a bit of a lengthy question. I'm trying to get a point out as I make the question. And I think recently we are starting to see that a lot of people, and I'm going to make the qualification of who should know better, have such fond thoughts about Islam. We could include John Brennan at the CIA. It was reported just a week ago that Ambassador Chris Stevens was close to being a Muslim. It was stated by a Libyan official that Stevens was in love with the mystical side of Islam. And then we see the entire left, heavily in America, but other places as well, seem to favor Islam more than America. And the left seems to look past the evil and reckless side of Islam and tries to find an aspect of glory in it. And then some on the left cooperate with Islam. Others cover for it. Others excuse it. And it's possible that New York is going to be electing a new mayor. So we'll see in the next many months now, Anthony Weiner, who has direct ties to the Muslim Brotherhood through his wife, Huma Abedin. I would like your thoughts on all this. Is this just judgment by God using Islam as the hammer of judgment? Or is this just, in your opinion, Walid, is this just recklessness and lack of discernment run amok with a lot of people?
That's quite a loaded question, and in order to answer it, we must look at several issues here. The historical influence of Islam in America, as well as answering that question with, it's all of the above, that Islam in itself, the radical movement, basically sprouted in the Middle East under governments that were against it. You have Hizb al-Tahrir in Palestine, which basically was thwarted by the British in Israel. It basically went into England and from there to the Indian subcontinent. And this is where we get Abu al-Ala al-Mawdudi, so on and so forth. And then also you have the Muslim Brotherhood, which found a heyday in the U.S. in the 60s, began to work at colleges and universities. In fact, the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood visited Greeley, Colorado. That was in the 60s, maybe even late 50s. Then you have the Wahhabist involvement with the Muslim Brotherhood. Those entities didn't find a secure environment in their lands because of Arab nationalism that basically prosecuted Islamists. But they found a heyday in the West, London and the United States. And the American populace, by and large, was not aware of this infiltration, thought of it as simply a religious movement and didn't link the dots, connect the dots when it comes to the Islamist aspirations and the threat into their own country. From there, they began to export themselves overseas. If you even recall, the Khomeini wasn't allowed under the Shah of Iran, yet the West was silent when the Shah was thwarted by Mujahideen Khalq Iran, in which later on you've seen the Khomeini land from Paris into Iran, taking over the country. You have the same situation in Tunisia, you know, a Nahda movement. These were exiles from Qatar and lived in London. Yet now they basically went back home to roost. Now, to answer the question, as far as, you know, the liberal media, the liberal environment in the United States and why it welcomes Islam, is it an issue of naivete or is it an issue of collaboration? I think it's the second, not the first. Most conservatives think that it's an issue of naivete. They call them useful idiots. But the liberal left is pretty educated on the issues. If you begin to examine the history of the Islamists working at the university level, at the environmental symposiums in which Al Gore would be attendant, you had personnel like Abdullah Omar Nassif, who's an Islamist Wahhabist, made arguments about Islam and environmentalism and how Islam supports environmentalism. And this basically tickles the ears of Al Gore. In fact, I did a whole research on Al Gore's statements about Islam, or the liberal left's statements about Islam, and I linked them to Abdullah Omar Nassif, who was, by the way, the one of the godfathers of Al-Qaeda, as well as he was the boss of Huma Abedin, the wife of Anthony Weiner, and the boss of Huma Abedin's brother and mother. And so, you know, we're looking at a web of structure of Islamist infiltration in the West from a long time ago.
You also said to me, you said this to me off air, that they have some similar things in common. You said that they have their socialist ties in common. They have their hatred for Judeo-Christianity. I'm talking about the left and Islam. They both rebel against God's ordinances. These are some factors that are drawing them together. Am I right there?
Correct. You're absolutely right. It is a war against Judeo-Christian ethics. And Islam, with the liberal movement, finds a lot in commonality. Very few Americans look into what is called Islamic socialism. Al-Ishtirakiya al-Islamiyya in the Arabic tongue. And Islamic socialism, you had under Muammar Gaddafi, Libya and Egypt, you had Islamic socialism. And that stems from Islam, when Muhammad was aided by al-Muhajirun, when he moved from Mecca to Medina. They espouse these ideas as basically an embryo to basically say Islam is, equivalent to what the socialist movement wants, spreading the wealth.
When guys like John Brennan, who should know better, who seemingly has... If he's not a Muslim, he's so Muslim-friendly, he might as well. He calls Jerusalem Al-Quds, and apparently Ambassador Chris Stevens was offered some security. Now, this was not on 9/11. This was days surrounding 9/11 in Libya, and he said to some security people in Libya, he trusted everybody, he loved all the Libyans, don't worry about it, et cetera, et cetera. Need I say more?
Well, right. I mean, this is the mentality of the liberal who most ambassadors, and this is something America is not aware of, most of ambassadors in the Middle East are very pro-Islamist. They love Islam, and this is why they choose them, because the populace can relate to them and they can relate to the populace. So, you know, most ambassadors, U.S. ambassadors in Muslim countries are very much pro-Islam, and they lean towards the Al Gore way of thinking, and they lean towards the government way of thinking. And that is, Islam is a peace-loving religion, and Islam basically collaborates with their ideology. In fact, that's what the Muslim Brotherhood took advantage of.
Okay.
Do you think that it is the same, no matter who is in the administration here in the United States, as far as what kind of ambassadors we have over there? Are you saying either it doesn't matter if it's Republican or Democrat?
Yes, pretty much. That's the case. If you examine each individual, you will find them basically agreeing with much of the synopsis of the Islamic movement.
So our State Department has been moving in that direction for a long time. That wouldn't matter who's in power as far as president goes.
Correct. In fact, it's moving in a great way, even in a country like Turkey. It's giving Turkey the mantle to control the Middle East. In other words, the United States policy currently says, you know, we've been involved in the Middle East for so long, we need to have some subcontractor to police the Middle East for us, and they work with the Turks. In fact, Erdogan of Turkey is the number two on the fast speed call list of President Obama.
It doesn't come as a surprise to you that America has become, at this point in time in 2013, such a Muslim-friendly, let's use the proper word, Muslim-loving nation, to the extent that we are favoring Islam and pounding Israel.
Absolutely, yes. The favoritism towards Islam is immense. In fact, we see it happening at the Syrian agenda. You look at even McCain. He is considered a conservative by several, and he is touting to aid the rebels in Syria. Well, the rebels in Syria are all pro-Al-Qaeda. You know, they have these beheadings and cannibalism going on, yet he just visited the Free Syrian Army, which is a structure, part and parcel of the Wahhabist regime. You see Saudi influence, and you see also Muslim Brotherhood influence. In Syria, it's the second largest influence in the Middle East, the Muslim Brotherhood. So you see that in Tunisia, you see that in Egypt, you know, when President Obama spoke, and he had Rashad Hussein even participate in writing the speech, the historic speech in Egypt, insisting that the Muslim Brotherhood attend the speech. In other words, here's an organization that was considered by the Egyptian regime as a terrorist entity, not allowed to participate in government. It was the United States that insisted it participates, giving it the legitimacy. We've seen the results of this. So in other words, the Obama administration was participant in elevating the Muslim Brotherhood, and we see the status quo. It's not an Arab Spring, it's an Islamic winter.
Yeah. Folks, if you join me late, you are listening to Understanding the Times Radio. I'm Jan Markell. I have on the line Waleed Shubat, and you've heard him on this program numerous times over the last decade. Now, and he's got a new book, The Case for Islamophobia. We'll say more about that just a little bit later. I also have in studio Eric Barger. We are talking about all things Islam for the next couple of segments. Waleed Shubat, I want quickly kind of focus our thoughts on Benghazi. And Eric and I have talked about this previously. It goes back to last December. So this, I guess we could say, is a little bit of an update. And at that time, we dealt with Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann in early December 2012. I want your perception on a few things, Waleed, your take on Benghazi. Do you think, actually you have in your book on page 257, you state that General Jerry Boykin has stated that Ambassador Stevens was in fact participating in gun running. Now, let me form a question to you, Waleed. Obviously, if this was the position of Boykin, suspect it's the position of yourself as well, that gun running through Turkey was the purpose of the outpost, and I didn't call it a consulate, the outpost in Libya, is that correct, in Benghazi?
Right, yes. The American regime has been collaborating with Syria, collaborating with the infrastructure going on with the Free Syrian Army. There's much weapon running. We don't know the exact details of this because, again, we don't have all the details or confessions from the White House and their involvement. But in Libya itself, Al-Qaeda runs free. You know, the borders in Libya is controlled by many Al-Qaeda members. There is several locations in Libya for Al-Qaeda. You have different groups that are affiliated with Al-Qaeda, which carried out the attack in Benghazi. We had ample reason to respond and, in fact, gave a rescue mission to Ambassador Stevens, which wasn't carried out. There was, you know, martyrs, American martyrs, who died in defense of that compound. So it was known fact for several reasons, and several even exchanges between the embassy itself to the White House asking for help for several, you know, weeks going on, to basically telling the White House that we are in great danger, but the White House looks the other way. So the question is why?
I want to play a real quick soundbite. It's actually Senator Rand Paul, who's quizzing Hillary Clinton. This is last January now, about the gun running.
Now my question is the U.S. involved with any procuring of weapons, transfer of weapons, buying, selling, anyhow transferring weapons to Turkey out of Libya?
To Turkey? I will have to take that question for the record. Nobody's ever raised that with me.
It's been in news reports that ships have been leaving from Libya and that they may have weapons. And what I'd like to know is the annex that was close by, were they involved with procuring, buying, selling, obtaining weapons? And were any of these weapons being transferred to other countries, any countries, Turkey included?
Well, Senator, you'll have to direct that question to the agency that ran the annex. And I will see what information is available. And
you're saying you don't know?
I do not know.
Again, Waleed, on page 257 of your book, you're quoting or referring anyway to General Jerry Boykin talking about this. In your mind, Waleed Shubat, what do you think's going on? Because what's the connection between running guns to Turkey, obviously for Syria? Again, the U.S. involved aiding and abetting al-Qaeda in Syria. Give us your perspective.
Well, I mean, it is, you know, Boykin is, he was a general and he's an expert in this issue. His opinion does matter and does count. Again, we don't have all the clear evidence of the gun running, but the White House have lied in the past. Eric Holder had lied about the gun running issue with Mexico, so we do have that. So as far as the government lying, it's on record proven that they've lied several times. Now, when it comes to why would the United States aid and abet the Syrian regime, there's two reasons. Well, one is that the United States is afraid of the expansion of Iran into Syria because mm-hmm. you have Iran through the majority Shia in Iraq, through Syria, through Hezbollah. You know, Israel is also concerned. From that perspective, I do understand the concern, but aiding and abetting al-Qaeda is another major concern because we've aided and abetted the Mujahideen in Afghanistan in the past. That gave the birth to the Taliban. This will give the birth to the Muslim Brotherhood of Syria to take control of the government of the entire country. So that's how they see it from their own perspective. It's a bone of contention because also Turkey is interested in Syria because it's a Sunni government. It's a Sunni country ruled by a minority Shia, which is called the Alawites, which is basically allied to Iran. But that in itself is a problem because if and when Syria becomes a Sunni state, then you have a major Sunni alliance of Islamist states, including Turkey, now Syria. Syria is very major because without Syria, you can't basically move into the Middle East. It's a hub between the Middle East and Turkey. So you will have an Islamic alliance, a Sunni Islamic alliance, much more dangerous than the Shia alliance in this case. So that's what they're doing, but it is going to, you know, prove to be a very major error on the side of the United States.
I think what's happening in Syria is a very important thing. It's going to play out to be in the future very more important than we see it now. And I also Correct. Think that we need to be careful about which voices, which analysts we receive information from that we think is truthful, because even in conservative media today, there are analysts applauding what McCain has done. And I mean, we have to really look at this. You know, when everybody stands up and says, oh, isn't it wonderful that we're going to have democracy? Well, look what that got us in Egypt. And I think, though both sides are evil as evil can get in Syria, we need to be careful that we don't applaud one and then end up having it bite us.
Correct. It's going to bite us. It's already biting us in Tunisia. There is much unrest in Tunisia. You have a Nahda over there, which is Islamist. And also, we always think of Libya as Libya being this secularist regime, but by far they collaborate with many agents of al-Qaeda and the Islamist movement there too. So we can see that there is not a single Arab Spring that ended up in the hopes of the Americans, and that is establishing democracy. The problem with the West is they need to begin to see dismantling Arab nationalism, opting for Islamic supremacism, which is a universalist movement, is a much more dangerous issue because Islamist movements have no respect for borders, no respect for nationalism, and the end justifies the means. By that, this will spread throughout the entire Middle East region. We will see in the near future a rise of a Sunni Muslim union that is more dangerous than Iran.
All right, we're going to pick this up after a very short timeout. Let me quickly remind you, this program is posted to my website on Saturday. Follow us on Twitter, Olive Tree Men, also on Facebook. Coming back with Waleed Shubat and Eric Barger in studio with me. We're talking about the various issues. What we're going to hit when we come back, the infiltration of Islam into the church. The church has been deceived.
The term, common word, kalimatun sawa'at, comes from the Quranic verse. Come, O Christians, let us have a common word between us and you, that we worship Allah alone.
More about that in exactly 2 minutes. Don't go away.
Recently, Jan Markell gave a message for the 30th Annual Banquet of Good News for Israel. Her message is free for you for any amount of a donation over our summer months. She spoke about the amazing survival of the nation of Israel over many millennia. It is titled Against All Odds. This is a free DVD, but you must ask for it when you give. Also, let us know where you're hearing this radio broadcast when you write. Our mailing address is Olive Tree Ministries, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. We'll be back in just 2 minutes.
I want to introduce you to a new product that you need for a resource, the Understanding Deception Package. We're offering 10 new booklets, and each one can be read in 20 minutes or less, then passed on to a friend or even a pastor. Would you like to better understand the push for the New Age, meditation, and higher self, or the Jesuit agenda? How about How to Know If the Emerging Church is Emerging into Yours, or Israel Replacing What God Has Not? There are more. The Truth About Energy Healing, The Truth About Lecto Divina, The Truth About Contemplative Prayer, The Labyrinth, Then Who Really Killed Jesus, and When Hitler Was in Power, based on my book, Trapped in Hitler's Hell. You can order just one or the entire package for just $12. Order online at olivetreeviews.org or call us Monday through Friday, 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444.
This is Eric Barger, and I want to encourage you to plan now to be with us this fall for our 2013 conference. Every year, thousands come from all over the United States to this one-of-a-kind conference where current events are discerned through the eyes of biblical interpretation. This year, Dr. Mark Hitchcock returns.
Daniel 11 is the most specific, detailed prophecy in the Bible.
Dr. Ron Rhodes will also join us to detail and outline what's next on God's calendar of events.
Really key foundational prophecy of Israel becoming a nation.
And we're also inviting an expert in discerning current events with WorldNet Daily founder Joseph Farah.
There seems to be a consensus among the American people that something is dreadfully wrong.
You don't want to miss Understanding the Times Conference 2013 at Grace Church in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, Saturday, October 5th. Admission is free, so check out our website, olivetreeviews.org, for all the details. I hope to see you then at Understanding the Times Conference 2013.
Obama is very sympathetic to the Islamic cause. By that, it proves also from the actual, Obama aspiration, what we've seen he done in Egypt. And what about his personal testimony? Now, the question I always ask is, where is his Christian conversion testimony? I've shared my testimony many times. A Christian testimony is the kind of testimony that basically says how your life was before you became a Christian. That is, when he was a Muslim. You never hear such a testimony. If you go to YouTube and put Obama the Quran, he's complimentary of the Quran, and he's very critical of the Bible. How could you be a Christian and criticize the Bible and compliment the Quran?
Walid Shubat is our radio guest today, and his new book, Islamophobia, can be found in our online bookstore at olivetreeviews.org. Now let's continue with the interview.
Welcome back, Understanding the Times Radio, Radio for the Remnant. Remember, you can be a CD subscriber to this program, just $15 a month, a CD of every program. And please get on our print and e-newsletter list, won't you? That's how you stay informed of what we are doing here. And I want to return to the topic of the day. My guest online is Walid Shubat. You can learn more at shubat.com, as it sounds, S-H-O-E-B-A-T. Shubat.com. I'll say more about his book at the close of the program. In studio with me also is my co-host for this program, Eric Barger. And Walid Shubat, your thoughts on the possibility that Huma Abedin's husband, Anthony Weiner, is running for mayor of New York. She has ties, again, to the Muslim Brotherhood, Muslim Sisterhood. She is a promoter and insider of all things Islam. Here we go. I go back to my intro, which I'm not going to repeat, but how these so many Americans today seem to be blinded about how wonderful Islam is, could end up being Islamic connections to the mayor's office in New York City, depending on how this election might play out. Your thoughts on this, Walid?
Well, when it comes to this issue, the first thing you will be accused of if you bring Anthony Weiner becoming a mayor and his wife linked to the Muslim Brotherhood is the guilt by association. But the counter-argument to this is that we have in our government what is called CARL, commitment, associations, you know, all these things, associations, do count when it comes to holding a government office. When we look at Huma Abedin, she was involved in what is called the Institute for Muslim Minority Affairs. Well, this is not about some small group that is scared about its affairs. It is a movement. It is a jurisprudence in the Islamic movement in which the Saudi government, working with Huma Abedin's father, came up with a manifesto, has the plan to take over the world. So it is this kind of Mein Kampf of the Wahhabist movement, in collaboration with the Abedins, began this manifesto saying that the Jews are the obstacles in America for the takeover of America. So it's not just a Muslim Brotherhood influence, which her mother, by the way, is not just a member of, but is a leader in the Muslim Brotherhood. We, in fact, disclosed her membership affiliation, and we disclosed the 63 Muslim Sisterhood. Her brother, Khalid, also works with Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi and Abdullah Omar Nassif, who was the godfather of al-Qaeda. So we have a terror link, not just an Islamist link, but a terror link into this movement. And her husband being associated with this whole facade should become a very big problem for the election of Anthony Weiner and should be a major sticking point with this involvement with the Muslim Brotherhood. We have done extensive research on the Abedin's link to the Wahhabists, not just the Wahhabists, but also the Muslim Brotherhood. But the Wahhabist link is a much more major issue with Saudi Arabia because the petrodollars, you know, opens madrasas and mosques in America. So this, and in fact, it also begins to bring the question of the influence. You talked about, you know, the issue in Libya and what happened in Benghazi. You know, is there any influence by Huma Abedin towards Hillary Clinton, which, by the way, they confess themselves, she's with her 24/7. So we're talking about major associations in Islamist links that harbor ill will for the United States. That should be a major issue of concern for both liberal and as well as conservative.
Is Barack Hussein Obama considered a Muslim in the Arab world?
Well, the answer to that is absolutely yes. If you look at the Arabic media, in fact, even if you look at the statements coming out by his Kenyan family, we examine the Arabic, you know, his grandmother, you know, says that he's very sympathetic to Islam, although she never says he's a Muslim. His relatives, you know, adhere that Obama is very sympathetic to the Islamic cause. By that, it proves also from the actual, you know, Obama aspiration, what we've seen he done in Egypt. And what about his personal testimony? I mean, he had interviewed with the New York Times, and he basically recited the call to the prayer in classical Arabic form. You can't learn that unless you've been in a madrasa. It's impossible. What is the call to the prayer? Allah is great, Allah is great. There is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his messenger. That's a declaration of the Islamic faith itself. In fact, Obama, on record, has been stating that this is the most beautiful call he's ever heard in his life. And that's after his supposed Christian conversion. Now, the question I always ask is, where is his Christian conversion testimony? I've shared my testimony many times. A Christian testimony is the kind of testimony that basically says how your life was before you became a Christian. That is, when he was a Muslim. You never hear such a testimony. Well, you know, what about that testimony? Can somebody supply me and provide me with that Christian testimony? It simply doesn't exist. We have doubts about his conversion. Plus, if you go to YouTube and put Obama the Quran, he's complimentary of the Quran, and he's very critical of the Bible. How could you be a Christian and criticize the Bible and compliment the Quran?
Well, we know where he was planted, in what church, or at least claims to be planted, and what he was learning there. And that's been, of course, has served in the media over and over for years now. But maybe it's too simplistic to put it, but my understanding is, if you're born of a Muslim father, in the eyes of Islam, you are a Muslim for life. So really, it could be, and I believe it may be, that being a politician, he sees it as politically correct to do what he wants to do and claim one side when he feels like it or when it's expedient for him and claim the other side. But that's also an edict in Islam that if you deceive the infidel for the cause of Islam, it's good, it's acceptable, and it's certainly forgivable. So,
if I may add a correction, when you said that if your father is a Muslim, you're considered a Muslim for life, is incorrect. Actually, you can convert to another religion, but if your father is a Muslim, then you could be killed. Quran is very clear. فَإِن تَوَلَّوْا فَخُذُوهُمْ وَقْتُلُوهُمْ Arabic, which means in English, if they leave and recant on the faith, then take them and kill them. So Obama is a renegade from Islam who is supposed to be persecuted by Islam. But that's not what we see.
That's much better.
In fact, we have Muruna. You're right about Muruna. You know, when you talk about you're allowed to lie, you know, there's much more to lying than taqiyya wa kitman, which is known in the West just recently. But what about Muruna? People should look it up. I'm the one who basically began to show this whole program by the Muslim Brotherhood. M-U-R-U-N-A. Muruna.
Your book is terrific and has much information on that, too.
Folks, if you want to get more information, the book is The Case for Islamophobia, Jihad by the Sword, America's Final Warning. Find the book, folks, at my website, The Case for Islamophobia, Jihad by the Sword, America's Final Warning. And just go to our products and you'll find the book there. And it's filled with information you need to have. I want to move into how the church is being fooled by Islam. And this is not one of my areas of expertise. I would say it is both of you gentlemen, your areas of expertise, but I want to dwell on it here for the next several minutes. Waleed, you covered this extensively in this book, and as online, you cover it extensively, and it's very, very important information that both you gentlemen cover it very extensively. Let's start with the common word, and that goes back to, I believe, 07. And Waleed Shubat, you call out in your chapter here on the church infiltration, you call out a number of organizations and individuals such as Sabeel, such as Evangelicals from Middle East Understanding. You cite Stephen Sizer, Colin Chapman. You cite Alex Awad and the Bethlehem Bible College and efforts to infiltrate the major media and churches. You cite Christ at the Checkpoint, which is this every other year religious left gathering in Bethlehem. And many, many efforts here to infiltrate, that word is appropriate, to infiltrate the church. And you give a very good illustration here of Alex Awad, again, Bethlehem Bible College, who says his family goes back to the Palestinian area for 1,000 years, when in fact he's really an Egyptian. This kind of disingenuousness, which is not understood really by Western evangelicals, and some of them aren't looking for the facts, and Western evangelicals often react with emotions only. But let's stay for a minute on the common word. Eric, give us a synopsis of the common word.
Well, the common word document that we're going to talk about was the answer to a document that Muslim clerics put out that was really referred to as a common word. And what we're going to talk about here is the Yale University answer to that document that starts with the false premise that Allah is Jehovah and that Isa, the Muslim Jesus spoken of in the Quran, is actually the Jesus of the Bible. And we have major evangelical leaders who have signed on to this, as well as many of the usual suspects in liberalism. And it once you look at this, you say, who can I trust? And in my opinion, those who have their names on that document, who claim to be our evangelical leaders, until they remove their name from the document, I'm not going to receive anything these guys are offering.
Give us some names. Who would be some of the familiar names who've signed? In other words, pastors and Christian leaders who probably should have known better. And then I want Waleed to comment, but who are some of these folks who've signed?
Robert Schuller would be maybe the lead in this. Of course, Rick Warren signed it and has been grilled on it over and over, but still hasn't removed his name or changed his stand. Bill Hybels from Willow Creek, think how many churches follow that particular ministry. Mm-hmm. Jim Wallace, of course, Brian McLaren, Richard Mao from Fuller Seminary, and several others. They're, you know, across the landscape of Christianity, or that is thought of as Christianity, people have signed this, and they continue to sign it. There's more names being added to this thing as we go on.
Well, one thing we need to understand when it comes to the common word, the term common word, kalimatun sawa, comes from the Quranic verse, come, O Christians, let us have a common word between us and you,
yes,
that we worship Allah alone. In other words, that the Christians denounce the Trinity. So anyone who signs this under the auspices of this Quranic verse is accepting Islam's denounce of the Trinity. That makes you an unchristian anymore. You know, it becomes a heretic. So it's heretical to sign this document from a spiritual perspective and then to call you know, to basically denounce Americans' war on terror and apologize for the Crusades and so on and so forth, and bring none of the issues that the Islamists have done in the history of mankind, Armenian genocide, killing of Jews and all these things. None of these issues are brought up, only a confession from the Christians that they are willing to sign such a document which denounces the Trinity. It's a huge issue because the spirit of Antichrist denounced the Trinity. We have to go back to 1 John, who is the liar. It is, but he who denies that Jesus is the Christ, he is an Antichrist that denies the Father and the Son. So it's an Antichrist movement. I'm not talking about the Antichrist, I'm talking about the spirit of Antichrist in this case, which is a movement to denounce the Trinity. It's an Arian heresy. So how could we be in bed with, you know, adherents of an Arian heresy, the religion of Islam, and call ourselves Christians? So this basically is detrimental for these leaders when they basically sign such a document or such an edict.
I want to play soundbite here of John Piper. I don't often play soundbites of John Piper. I've got issues with some of his theology, primarily as it concerns Israel. He stepped up to the plate here and is challenging those who have signed this common word. And after that bite, Eric, I want your comment.
In October of 2007, 138 Muslim clerics produced a document, it's about 20 pages in the copy that I have, called A Common Word Between Us and You, in which they extended a right hand for conversation to the Christian church and sent it to the Pope and to any other Christian leaders who would be interested, in which the main thesis was that love for God and love for neighbor is a common ground between Christianity and Islam. And there have been a lot of responses. You can go to A Common Word, I think that's the name of commonword.com or something like that, where you can find it. And there have been a lot of responses. The main one that concerns me, and the reason I'm talking here, is because I am disappointed with the response that came from the one that was published in the New York Times back in, I think it was published in November of last year, of 2007. But I have a copy of it here. It's called Loving God and Neighbor Together, A Christian Response to a Common Word Between Us. And I just want to register publicly a disappointment with this document. In fact, a profound disappointment with the way that it's worded, and surprise at some of the people that signed it, some of my friends who signed it, who I would have thought would be more careful in what they lend their support to, because what's missing from this document is a clear statement about what Christianity really is and how we could come together to talk with Muslims from our unique, distinctive, biblical standpoint. It won't work to simply say, you have a prophet and we have a prophet, which is really the way this document sounds. We have a prophet who said, love your enemies. You have a prophet who said, love your enemies. That's the way this document sounds. I'm sure the people that wrote this do not believe that, but that is what it sounds like.
Okay, that was Pastor John Piper commenting and expressing great disappointment in his colleagues for buying into this common word and the Christian response to the common word. Eric, your comment?
I wish I really believed that all the men who signed this really don't believe it, but have, like John Piper just said, I wish I could follow what he said, but I think some of them are completely ignorant about this and really have signed into it because it looks, you know, it's acceptable to the public. It looks like that we want peace, and we're willing to give an olive branch. But the Quran is so clear because it denies the deity of Jesus Christ, rejects him as God. It rejects his death on the cross. And the very passage that we're talking about here from Surah chapter 3 that Waleed alluded to, and he was completely correct in his comments about this. I mean, they are saying we've got to come to their viewpoint to have any dialogue with them, that we believe only in Allah. That this is complete false theology. Yet our evangelical leaders, I would expect this of some of the liberals, but evangelicals have bought into this and are pushing this. And like I said, until their names are removed, until they demand their names be taken off, I'm not going to follow, believe, or accept what they're saying on other issues.
Well, I agree with Piper. I mean, he's absolutely correct in denouncing it, and he's correct in pointing out that it doesn't really etch the Christian theology, their view. And this is the problem with dialogue. When we have Muslim-Christian dialogue, it's usually tend to basically gear us to no offense. Well, the Bible is very offensive. The cross is offensive. The Trinity is offensive. Abortion is offensive. Gay marriage is offensive. Everything is offensive. So it's, you know, when we become unoffensive Christians, that means we sell out our souls, and that's what's happened.
Well, the other area in the church, and again, there are so many because I touched on them in this intro, from the Christ at the Checkpoint, and I've done programs about Christ at the Checkpoint, where the religious left gets together in Bethlehem and denounces the wall of separation that has cut down the homicide bombings by 95% in the Israel area and kept out Palestinian terrorists, and yet Christ at the Checkpoint meets every other year to celebrate the entire Palestinian cause, denounce Israel, and I haven't even mentioned the Hope for the Holy Land, which Lynn Hybels with Sammy Awad with World Vision, and I've done programs on that, as they gather in the various churches and evangelical campuses. And what I heard in September of 2012 at Bethel University was blatant historical revisionism and blatant lies being given against Israel on behalf of the Palestinians. And I heard the president of Bethel University get up and say some shocking things. And my producer, Larry Kutzler, was with me at that time. So we've got a stealth attack coming into the church to try to bend the mind of evangelical Christians, and they're doing it fairly successfully.
Got to comment on what you just said, because I went a month ago
to
Lynn Hybels and Sammy Awad and the gal from World Vision that's been traveling with them. And they began by saying, look how downtrodden we are. We can't even cross over. We can't travel in our own country. And they put up a wall, and they try to build a case, you know, that somehow, look what's happened to us. Well, yeah, but it was from those areas that the bombs were coming. Israel had to do something for self-preservation, for any modicum of peace. And I sat there the whole night just disturbed, and then I tweeted in a question about replacement theology, which caused all three of them to immediately stand up and try to defend their positions. And, you know, their positions are indefensible when you look at the Bible in the context of understanding the end times.
We're going to change our special report this week, and we're going to cover some more of the ongoing conversation here with Waleed Shubat. I've got Eric Barger in studio. We're coming back in exactly 60 seconds. Don't go away.
I want to remind you that this ministry continues 24/7 on our website, where you can find daily headlines that reveal how the predictions in the Bible are coming true. Those headlines are posted daily, keeping you up to the minute on news that affects a biblical worldview. That address is olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. More from Waleed Shubat coming up.
You have a socialist movement. And by the way, these groups that are involved in this are not really conservative Christian. They're socialists. They have a socialist agenda. In fact, the Jesus at the Checkpoint is very easy to thwart their argument. Simply ask them, would you denounce Hamas as a terror organization?
We still have more to come with Waleed Shubat and Jan in just 60 seconds.
One of the best gifts we get from our listening audience when you take the time to write us about what you hear on the program. Our staff and media team work on programming ideas that often come from comments from our listening audience. Along with your participation in writing, please consider becoming a financial partner as well. Each week, we hear from people who have discovered us for the first time and tell us this program supplies information they are not getting in their churches. Understanding the Times Radio is a ministry that brings the Bible into current events and interprets the times without compromise. Won't you prayerfully consider your partnership with us? Be sure to tell us what station you're listening to. We are on hundreds of stations across America. Our mailing address is Olive Tree Ministries, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. Or call us, 763-559-4444.
This is the pastor. He says we need to give them, Hamas, that is, a chance. Hello? Why should we give Hamas a chance? It's a terrorist organization. Mm-hmm. So there is support for Hamas, for support for killing innocent Jewish civilians, as part and parcel of what this group believes in. because I lived in Israel. I went third and fourth grade to those type of schools in which Abraham was a Palestinian revolutionist. Jesus was a Palestinian revolutionist. Yeah. Moses was a Palestinian revolutionist. This is basically a gymnastics game by the socialists and the pro-terror infrastructure in the Palestinian arena to jimmy-rig the entire Bible.
If you have enjoyed this program today, remember, Walid Shubat's new book, Islamophobia, can be found in our online bookstore on our website. Here again is Jan Markell and Eric Barger with Walid Shubat.
Okay, welcome back. I'm going to get back to the interview in just a second or two. Let me quickly say, is it time for you to review your estate plan just when updating your will or trust? Would you consider Olive Tree Ministries with a special gift? And if you want to direct it to radio, that would be great. Our radio expenses are enormous, so just think about us as you're making those plans and preparations, won't you? Want to get right back to our conversation with Walid Shubat? Learn more at shubat.com. Eric Barger's in studio as we discuss some of these Islamic-related issues, the Islamic infiltration, and I opened up by saying why the absolute obsession, particularly on the left, in America, for all things Islamic. We have sort of morphed now into how it's fooling the church and Christian institutions, and we kind of went out of the last segment on that theme, and I don't want to quite leave it yet. Walid Shubat, because you said at the break, you made the reference, of course, evangelicals for Hamas. Talk to us about that.
Well, every Christian listening to the program should Google evangelicals for Hamas. It's something that, you know, readers should look into. Here's how it works. You have a socialist movement, and by the way, these groups that are involved in this are not really conservative Christians. They're socialists. They have a socialist agenda. In fact, the Jesus at the checkpoint is very easy to thwart their argument. Simply ask them, would you denounce Hamas as a terror organization? Would you denounce the PFLP become a problem? Because this movement, they say they don't believe in carrying arms, or basically they don't believe in fighting Israel through arms. But they do believe that other entities like the PFLP and Hamas have a right to carry arms against Israel. From that perspective, we find tremendous amount of information. What we need to do is basically partner the Awad family. It's not only Alex Awad, it's Bishar Awad, Alex Awad, Sami Awad. Those family members with the Bethlehem Bible College are part and parcel of support to the PFLP. In fact, in that article, I obtained a dissertation by a student at that Bethlehem Bible College in which he supported the PFLP. Not only that, he supported the martyrs, the terrorists of the PFLP. So we have amazing evidence to show that this movement are in bed with terrorists, which is against the United States, by the way. So from that perspective, we can see that the infiltration is, you know, with pastors. They're not aware of this group's involvement in terrorism. There is Pastor Cordero.
Yes.
Wayne Cordero, the largest church in Hawaii. In fact, I was able in that article to show the video clips from the TV interview by Pastor Cordero in which he supported Hamas. This is why I called the article Evangelicals for Hamas. And he said emphatically, this is the pastor. He says, we need to give them, Hamas, that is, a chance. Hello? Why should we give Hamas a chance? It's a terrorist organization. Mm. So there is support for Hamas, support for the PFLP, for support for killing innocent Jewish civilians as part and parcel of what this group believes in, that is support to terrorism. Then we have Alex Awad visiting Iran. He visited a symposium in which they called for jihad, martyrdom, suicide bombing. This is a huge issue for an organization that says they are about Christian persecution. They're not about Christian persecution, and neither are they Baptists. I have a personal experience with these kind of groups because I lived in Israel. I went third and fourth grade to those type of schools in which Abraham was a Palestinian revolutionist. Jesus was a Palestinian revolutionist. Yeah. Moses was a Palestinian revolutionist. This is basically a gymnastics game by the socialist and the pro-terror infrastructure in the Palestinian arena to jimmy-rig the entire Bible, say that the Bible supports the killing of Jews.
Eric, give us a paragraph on Chrislam. You spoke on that, Understanding the Times, 2011. This is another infiltration of the church, which is completely unsound.
Islam is the syncretic religion that comes out of Nigeria some 30 years ago. It's a synthesis of Christianity and Islam. And, you know, this is trying to marry two completely incompatible books and religions. And on the part of Christians, or those who claim to be Christian anyway, it really is peace at any cost. In other words, we can cut up the Bible, ignore many of the things it states. Really, the mission of the church goes out the window if we can have peace with those who are Muslims. And we all want peace. But peace at any cost really isn't peace at all, especially when it comes to denying central doctrines of the faith. And in the end, you deny Jesus' resurrection and his deity and so on and so on to make peace with this religion that has so many evil flaws in it. It would take us 10 programs to get through them all.
That's true. Waleed, I want to go quickly just because we're down to roughly 5 minutes here. And I want us to be able to cover something you're very troubled about. And you're the one who's going to have to address it because we are not all that informed about it, and that is the two brothers that Barack Obama has. One of them has Christian roots. The other has some very troubling ties to Wahhabist Islam. One is the name of George. We learned about George in the movie 2016 by Dinesh D'Souza. I don't think the listeners know a lot about his brother Malik, although as we speak, there's some news coming out about his brother Malik. Talk to us about it, what we need to know in 5 minutes.
Well, when it comes to George Obama comes from a Christian part of the Obama family, and this is why he's abandoned by President Obama, which clearly shows that Obama is more sympathetic towards his Muslim family versus his Christian family. George Obama, his mother is Jael Otieno, and if you look at the Otieno family, they live in the States. They're very Christian and very active in their faith, and that's why they're abandoned completely from the family. When it comes to Obama's Muslim side of the family, you have his uncle Saeed Obama, who basically we show photos of him and articles of him collaborating with the Muslim World League, which, by the way, supported Al-Qaeda. You have also Musa Ismail Obama, who was on Al Jazeera. This is major news media, interviewed on Al Jazeera, talking about President Obama's grandmother, Mama Sara Foundation. The Mama Sara Foundation supports Wahhabi institutions. In fact, from the statements that was made on Al Jazeera, Musa Ismail Obama stated that basically 90% of the funding for the Mama Sara Fund Foundation goes to the most virulent Wahhabi schools in Saudi Arabia. That's sending recruitment for madrasas from Kenya. It goes to one of the major universities, that's the number one university par excellence in the Muslim Wahhabi sect, and that is Umm al-Qura University, which was founded by Muhammad Abdul Wahhab, the father of Wahhabism. Those are no small issues. Then you have Malik Obama. Malik Obama, I was the first in the country from several major sources in the Arabic media showing his involvement, partnership, with Sudan. Sudan is considered a terror state by the State Department. He is a U.S. citizen. He has established what is called the Malik Barack H. Obama Foundation. Barack H. Obama Foundation got a 501c3 status by falsity through the IRS. The IRS basically was involved in establishing this foundation. And Malik Obama, I broke the news, is the executive director. He is the advisor of the Islamic Da'wah Organization, Islamic, the call to Islam. Islamic Da'wah Organization of Sudan branch. Hello, that's Sudan. And shows how he's building madrasas, and he's wanting to establish one madrasa for $2 million, in fact. So Malik Obama's involvement with Omar al-Bashir, in fact, I have photos with him and Omar al-Bashir and Sawar Dahab. Sawar Dahab, his boss, Sawar Dahab of Sudan, I show in my research, going to Hamas. In fact, in Hamas, when he gave a speech in Hamas, he called for jihad against Israel. He called for recapturing Jerusalem. He called for terrorism. Very openly and very eloquently. So you have here the brother of President Obama. By the way, Malik Obama was with President Obama in the White House several times. He's a U.S. resident. He basically was the best man in Obama's wedding, so on and so forth, back and forth. So it's the link between President Obama and Malik Obama is overwhelming, and we have photos to show it and interviews to show it. So you have here a brother of the president who is in bed with a wanted man, Omar al-Bashir, who is wanted by the International Criminal Court on 7 major counts of genocide in Darfur. In fact, Obama himself called for capturing some of these people, and yet there his brother is in bed with them, and allowed citizenship, allowed to expedite a 501c3. There is a major cartel here from the Obama family itself. Proven fact,
okay.
Supported by several news media here in the West, that our findings is absolutely correct.
Well, if I recall right, in the movie 2016, Obama's brother George, who you say represents more of a Christian side, had to borrow a couple $1,000s from Dinesh D'Souza to, I don't know what the cause was for, but clearly the point is one of the brothers doesn't get any attention, and the other one is very favored. Waleed, where could folks find more information on what it is you're talking about right now?
It's very simple. They can go to our website, shoebat.com,
mm-hmm.
as you spell the word shoe and the word bat, one word, SHOEBAT.com. Mm-hmm. And our book is The Case for Islamophobia. The Case for Islamophobia shows the infiltration in the West, in the United States, yeah. by the major Muslim extremists, from government to military to White House to everywhere.
Find the book, folks, at my website, The Case for Islamophobia, Jihad by the Sword, America's Final Warning. And just go to our products and you'll find the book there. And it's filled with information you need to have. Waleed Shoebat, I really want to thank you for some of the, I know we've just barely touched the top of the surface, but all of the issues that are there and that are so very troubling.
Well, I appreciate Waleed's stand, and it's a courageous stand. We need to pray for him and
yes.
continue to lift him up, because anybody who's making these stands, there's a price to be paid. And I'm just glad that he's making this. And I know a lot of people are being touched and their spiritual is being changed because of what he's doing.
Let me just say, as we go out of this program, we've talked about some troubling things, and some things never change. Jesus will still be King of Kings and Lord of Lords today, tomorrow, and forever. Prayer will always work. The cross and not government will be our salvation. There always is room at the cross. Always, folks, won't you say with the psalmist, I trust in you, O Lord. Our times are in your hands. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
If you would like to listen to Understanding the Times Radio on your smartphone, our phone app can be found at oneplace.com. That's oneplace.com.
Jesus, Redeemer, mighty to save. You are the love song we'll sing forever, bowing before you, blessing your name.
Remember, this program is posted to our website at olivetreeviews.org and can be downloaded for sharing with others. Or if you would like a weekly podcast of any of the Understanding the Times programs, just go to the website olivetreeviews.org. Remember, if you contribute any amount to help us with our expenses of Radio Time this summer, we will send you a free DVD of a recent message Jan Markell gave called Against All Odds. Make sure you ask for it when you write. Our mailing address is Olive Tree Ministries, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. Thank you for your financial support, and please remember to pray for Jan Markell and her media team as they bring you this program every week.